So we've had a great day. You guys got a little bit of learning left in you? I know it's been a long day.
The cookies are calling, though.
Oh. Do they have sugar in them?
No.
Okay. Sweet. Well, hey, is a quick review. Let's kind of step back for a second. Our hope is what you're hearing from us is that conflict is unavoidable. Two people, different. We are never going to see eye to eye on everything. Conflict is unavoidable. Dealing with conflict is avoidable. We have a choice. We can either ignore, we can sweep problems under the rug, we can mismanage conflict. There's a lot of ways that we can deal with conflict poorly. And yet, when we do that, we truly miss out on something amazing. So as Aaron and I hopefully are casting this vision that conflict is driven by what? Yeah, when our buttons get triggered. Remember, these are lies that have been written on our hearts, sensitive areas, feeling rejected, unloved, disrespected, abandoned, failed, not good enough, we don't measure up, not a priority, whatever it is. We all have these. We all have emotions that are sensitive. They get triggered, right? And when they get triggered, what instantly happens to our heart? Yeah, and hopefully you never see a little roly-poly bug the same, and that you protect it and don't step on it because they have emotions.
Yes,
so we just don't want to casually destroy such emotional beings. Our buttons get pushed, our hearts close, we react. Mm-hmm. Reactions will always be a fight or a flight, so hopefully you have better insight on that. If that's something that you want to keep learning more and more about, the fight, we have a book, Fight Your Way to a Better Marriage, has all that in there. So this morning then, right, we talked about what do we do? So we don't want the combat fight, we want the good fight.
Yep, and so you first and foremost focus on them or you. You. We focus on ourselves. We get our hearts back open. That is our goal. So in order to do that, we take a time out, we name what we're feeling, and then we seek God's truth. And so going through those three steps, we're going to get our heart back open, and so we can then come together and re-engage in this conversation and continue on the good fight.
I forgot the clicker.
Oh,
so it'll
like,
be hard to thank you.
I thought maybe you were
receive.
Sick or something.
Well,
the creme brulee was reemerging. I was going to say, well.
It's because I look white. Is that pale and pasty?
Well, that,
thank
no.
You were nice. I will hit you with a laser. It's kind of weak. Wow. Anyway, that's a problem. Where is Aaron was talking about, remember that verse, okay, that she talked about, again, you hypocrite, why do you look at the dust in your brother's eye? Pay no attention to the log of your own eye. So we dealt with the first, get the log of your own eye. Now we want to hit that second part, because we love that verse because it really divides our task into two things. I need to deal with me, get my heart open, so that we can have a productive conversation, that we can take whatever issue that we're that got us into this conflict, and that we can work that to some sort of solution, some sort of revolution, and so resolution. And so, again, this is the then part of that verse. Then we can see clearly when our hearts are open, we have an amazing opportunity. Remember, we keep promising you that conflict is actually the doorway to intimacy. I know some of you are still shaking your head going, this doesn't seem like it. So this is the session that we're going to prove this. So hold us accountable to that. If the assertion is right, that conflict can be used as a way to get you into deeper levels of understanding, connection, intimacy, we want to show you how to do that. Mm-hmm. One of our favorite verses, James 1:2, it says, when trials come your way, consider that an opportunity. That's the theme verse for this session. So when we go through hard times, I need to see that differently. I need to look at conflict differently, not as something to avoid, not as something to sweep under the rug, but as an actual opportunity. I get a chance to learn something new about my wife. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal. I have an opportunity to learn something about me. Maybe it's a button that I wasn't aware of. Shared several failure. Okay, things when they're unfair. I mean, I've got others. So it's an opportunity to even learn something about me. It may be something about, right, mm-hmm. our relationship.
About our marriage, and that something needs to be readjusted or tweaked just a little bit. So that's such an opportunity to learn about him, about me, and about this marriage relationship that we're both 100% responsible for.
So we're going to prove that. And how we're going to prove that is something that we call Love Talk. So Love Talk is an acronym, because I know some of you are going, I know you were a C student, but love is a pretty easy word to spell, and I don't think that's right. So as an acronym, this is how we get to those deeper levels. And to kind of set this up, Aaron and I want to tell you a story again. Early on in our marriage, these are some of our favorite stories to talk about. We've been married six months-ish?
Mm-hmm. Back in the Denver Seminary apartment up on the fourth floor. I think that night I had worked like 3 p.m. to 3 a.m. So about 3:30, I rolled into the seminary parking lot. I went up all four staircases, and then I got to our little apartment inside with this little bathroom area right outside the master bedroom, and Greg was asleep, you know, of course, at 3:30 in the morning, and I think you had an exam the next day, and so I was trying to be really quiet and not turn a lot of lights on, so I took my contacts out, brushed my teeth. Well, I got to the bedroom door and was going to take that well-worn path, you know, to the bed. You know, you can sometimes feel your way, you know, that there's this there, so then you turn that way and you kind of feel your way in the dark to your bed. Well, I was going to do that. But apparently while I was at work that night, things had changed. But I didn't know that.
No. I, on the other hand, was not working. I was home, bored. Aaron was gone, my best friend at seminary, he was busy, nothing on like the three channels that mm-hmm. actually, you know, came through the seminary cable, whatever, you know, the CCN network wasn't working really well. Anyway, whatever. I was totally bored. And so to the point that I had studied for the test, I was ready for that, and I finally, like 8 o'clock, just went, yeah, forget it. You know, there's nothing to do. I'm just going to go to bed. So I walked back into our master bedroom area, and I remember walking through the door, and for whatever reason, I actually just noticed how our room had been put together, how Aaron had arranged everything. And it was like for the very first time, I just kind of went, something doesn't seem right about how she laid this out. It doesn't seem efficient. Something wasn't right. I don't know what was wrong. It just didn't look right. So I'm thinking, you know what? I'm bored and really not even that tired. I'm going to rearrange our bedroom. Mm-hmm. Aaron will come home. Hey, she'll see that I'm taking an interest in our life. Who knows what'll happen after that? You know, as we get the smoke machine going, you know?
Yeah.
Who knows? And so this, to me, all made sense. And so I did it. I took our bed, put it to a different side of the room. I took all the furniture, repositioned everything, these little shelves. I mean, did the whole thing. Stepped back and went, this looks great. I can't wait for my wife to come home. Turned off the lights and went to bed, waiting expectantly. Never thinking that there might be a little problem with this plan. So as Aaron said, 3 in the morning, she gets home exhausted, just wants to get into bed, doesn't want to turn lights on to wake me up, which wasn't smart on your part, FYI. Anyway, so she comes, so imagine that, right? Imagine you're tired, exhausted, you've taken your contacts out, and I think literally like you're legally blind without
completely.
Those things in there.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, completely legally blind. So yeah. Dark, can't see anyway.
Yeah, when she's mean to me, I tell her, I'm going to hide your glasses. Then you'll see how much you need me. You just never really want to think about it. So I know
that's
that
awful, isn't it?
I heard it in my mind. I thought, yeah,
that you should not have said that.
So I apologize. Mm-hmm.
We'll
so
talk about
she,
it later.
So imagine, okay, put yourself, what'd you say?
I said, we'll talk about it later.
Oh, man. Well, it's an opportunity.
It is.
So imagine, all right, you're Aaron. You waltz into the room knowing that path, as she said, she knows where to turn and what to watch out for. No idea that the whole pathway's been changed. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that she hit was this little like table thing, all right, that had a lamp on it.
Yeah, so you know those little tables, the little wood ones that have the three legs that screw into the bottom, and typically you put like a nice tablecloth on it, and then usually, you know, a lamp or a vase or something nice in the middle of it to kind of decorate it. That one had a lamp,
So she banks into that thing, upends it, the lamp crashes, breaks, the table perfectly, you know, falls over to where the little three legs are sticking up. Mm-hmm. So somehow she gets wedged in there and gets off balance. And as she's falling forward, just somehow her shin just scrapes up against one of the wooden legs. It just takes like layers of skin off her shin. And so she screams out, you know, in pain as she's, you know, falling forward. And by the way, I'm seriously not making any of this up.
You're just slowing it down a
lot.
It
is. It's like super slow-mo. Yeah. And so she falls forward as she's being scraped into the side of the room, which I had repositioned. Someone gave us like this old pair of antique skis. Really cool old big ski. They're really looking cool. We still have them.
Yeah,
well, she crunches into that thing. Well, they fall down. Okay, and all the way down, again, no lie, it hits the one shelf that we own in our entire apartment that contains every single one of her precious moments figurines. So it takes the shelf off. These things nosedive to the ground and explode in all their preciousness, okay? And then the skis continue to fall over, bang, right next to the bed. So I wake up to all this noise, someone screaming, things breaking, glass crashing. What do you think I'm thinking? We're being robbed! Exactly. That whole amygdala thing she talked about, the fight or flight, kicks into high gear. So I don't want to fight anybody in the dark. I just want to get out of the room, regroup, figure out what do I need to do and who do I need to kill, all right? And so I just head for the door, forgetting that I've rearranged our bed. So I go... And so now I think someone's clubbed me, you know. So I'm just trying to figure this out. What's happening? When all of a sudden the light pops on, and it's her. I'm like, oh. And then I remember, surprise! Welcome home. The whole thing I had worked up in my mind, the reunion that we would have. Not so much. Yeah, there was no kissing or tomfoolery. There was none of that.
Nothing.
Okay? We got into a fight. We get our buttons instantly got pushed, and we start to argue about whatever. I'm not even sure what happened. But it got pretty ugly. I think one point Aaron even says, you know, well, what kind of a husband stays up late at night rearranging a bedroom anyway? Well, I've since learned that not very many, but anyways, I did.
I didn't think so either, but.
Yeah, that was mean. So, how do you go from that level of just frustration and hurt and injury and disconnection? Because I'm guaranteeing you one of us, I don't remember which one of us, probably slept on the couch. We went to bed and just disconnect. You know, I had all her little precious moments with me, just, you know, nestling them, you know, you love me in pieces. But anyway, so how in the world do you go from that to actually the very next day? We didn't know what we were doing. We stumbled into some things accidentally that actually really worked well to where at the end of a conversation the next day, I actually learned something about Aaron that I'd never known before. I learned something that helped us get to a great place, a true place of connection. And that's what Love Talk can do. Again, we didn't know this. We didn't have a model. We just kind of did some things. But now looking back, we did some things that actually, right, were pretty helpful. So Love Talk is an acronym that simply stands for Listen, Understand, Validate, and Empathize. So you got to picture this kind of as a stairway leading down, okay, that we're going to start kind of at that level of disconnect, okay, nothing's been resolved, worked through, but we're going to start with listening. And as we do that, that takes us a little bit lower, and then as we understand, we go a little bit lower, validate, man, now we're cranking, now we're getting deep, all the way to what we would consider one of the best places, one of the neatest connections within our marriage, and that's when we both are able to empathize with one another. So that's where we're heading. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, it's made such a big difference. So let's jump right in, and we'll hit L.
Mm-hmm. And so remember, this is after you've been stuck in this crazy reactive cycle, you've gone through a timeout, naming what you're feeling, seeking God's truth, you're assuming your heart's open. So your heart's open, you know where you're at, you go to your spouse, you know, hey, how are you doing? I'm open, you know, can we have this conversation? And if he says no, okay, you can say, you know what, let's, you know, I'll come back and check in 20 minutes, we'll see where you're at. Or you can choose to step into the listener role. So that's, it's good that this is first, because you can step into the role of simply being a listener. We would never encourage someone to offer their heart, their feelings, that precious place to someone who's closed, because it's, you know, it's probably not going to go well. You know, if you offer that precious part of yourself to someone who's closed, you know, they're going to trample on it and kick it and not value it. So step into the listener role first and foremost. And really the essence of to listen, of being a listener, is to offer your presence. So just simply being present with the person you love, your spouse, you know, just being there with them. We found something really interesting in the Chinese Mandarin language, the verb to listen. So this makes up the verb to listen, these three different characters. Super fascinating, because the first one is actually stands for eyes. The second one stands for ears, but it's this third one that is just super fascinating. It's an open heart. So it's eyes, you give them your eyes, you give them your ears, and you offer them your open heart. And, you know, that's the essence of it. That I'm being intentional about turning towards him, offering him my eyes. There's something so valuable about eye contact. When we went through the adoption process, you know, they told us, you've got to get Annie to look at you in the eyes. It's attaching, it's bonding. You know, make sure that she looks at you in the eyes. So they'd say, you know, put a sticker on your forehead. And, you know, just so she's staring at your forehead, because then her eyes will be matching yours. And so my husband deserves my eyes. But typically, when we're, you know, having a conversation, there's one little thing in our culture today that can be distracting. What do you think it is? Your cell phone. And we always say there's one person in a marriage usually that is not attached to their cell phone, and then there's one that is attached to their cell phone. I am the one that is attached to my cell phone. Greg comes home at the end of a long day, takes his cell phone, puts it in the drawer, and shuts it. So everybody texts me or calls me, because they know that I will respond and I will tell him what they need to tell him, and then I'll text them back and tell them your answer. But you are not distracted by your cell phone, not one bit. Never.
Never.
But I am.
Yes.
And there's times that we'll be having a conversation and I'll feel, you know, now I've got the Fitbit that I'll vibrate when there's a text coming through. So I'm distracted then. I'm like tapping on it, you know, and then I'll get my phone out. And so I'll be looking down and he'll stop talking. And I'm like, what's wrong? I can look, you know, just keep talking. And he'll just stop in silence. And so I've learned that if I want to have a conversation with him, turn towards him, give him eye contact, and set the cell phone aside. It seems so simple, but if you're like me, it's challenging. It's hard. And so it's important to become a good listener. It seems like such an easy thing, but I think it's becoming a lost art in our society. Really to give full-blown attention and no distractions to our spouse.
And this one is so important, because this is what gets us in to the process. So what I want you to do, turn to each other real quick, and find out, here's what you're going to ask. You're going to figure out, what does listening actually mean to your spouse? So how I would do this is to say, Aaron, if I'm listening well, so you feel that I'm listening, what is it that I'm doing? So I'm wanting to figure out behaviorally, what does that look like? You know, so for me, I know that Aaron is listening to me when her eyes are looking at me, not at her cell phone. So that's a big one to me. Mm-hmm. So what about you?
Yeah, I know you're listening to me when you're repeating back what I'm saying, you know, or you're summarizing it, or at least responding, because there's times I'll call him at work And I just launch into whatever's just happened or whatever's going on that day, and I'll hear, yeah. And I'm like, you're not listening to me, are you? And, you know, but of course, it's kind of rude to just call you at work and not ask, do you have time to talk? But, you know, I just start talking like usual. So so when I know when you are responding appropriately to my verbal cues that you are listening to me.
I know. I tell her I need a little verbal foreplay here. She just goes deep really quick.
We'll talk about that one too later.
Is that
I know.
Was I not supposed to share that out
filter.
Loud?
Filter.
Why? What? Anyway.
Yeah. There's something.
All right.
Yeah.
So it's still true. Verbal foreplay. Memorize it. So.
They're going to talk about that tomorrow in the seminar.
There you go. So that might be your timeout word. Oh, verbal foreplay. So once you turn to each other, it just answer that. So if I'm listening to you, what am I doing? How would you know if I'm being a good listener? And your mark, get set, go. All right, well, hopefully you've gotten a little more clarity in terms of what that actually means to your spouse. Again, that's helpful as I hear Erin say that. When I repeat things back, she knows that I'm listening. That's great information. So after we'd sort of slept, you know, in different spots, after me rearranging our room, that next morning, okay, as we both kind of came together around the kitchen table or whatever, that's when I started this whole thing by just saying, hey, could we talk about what happened last night? I'd like to better understand what was going on, because man, that fired you right up. Help me to understand. So again, someone has to get us into this conversation. And guys, this is where, as your brother, this is where I'd challenge you to, as the leader, to lead out in this way. Someone's got to get us back together. Someone's got to get us into this conversation. Why not us? Why not lead this way? Why not put off being understood first to seek to understand? And that's a great way that we can sacrifice as husbands, living out our role that Christ lays out. And so we can do that. So as we start to listen, again, that drops us a little bit. Now mm-hmm. Now things are flowing, and it goes then right into the you.
Mm-hmm. Which is to understand. And the essence of to understand is to be curious, to have curiosity towards your spouse, you know, because it's easy to assume that we know exactly what their experience was, because we had our experience, and we assume it's just like ours. But really, it's often quite different, kind of like a crime scene. They have many witnesses to a crime scene, and it's going to be different accounts of what happened and different pieces of what happened. His emotions might be different than mine. The button is more than likely going to be different than mine. And so it's key to really step into this as we're going a little bit deeper from listening to understanding. and really just being curious. We're going to play a quick little audio video clip, and you'll see that being curious actually can save a life.
I got a nephew that I think a lot of, and he works for this oil company, and about 4 years ago, they moved him down to South America, and I ain't seen him since, but he still thinks about me and my crabapple. Every Christmas, he sends us a nice present. This past Christmas, he sent us a live bird, green bird about this tall, had a little yellow top notch on his head with some red on it, a hook beak, and sent it to us live from South America. I'll tell you something, that bird was delicious. Yes, sir. We had him for Christmas dinner. We fixed him with some dressing and some cranberry sauce, sweet potato scuffle. Well, after Christmas, my nephew called. He wanted to know if we got the bird. I said, we got him. We know how we liked him. I said, he was delicious. He said, you don't mean you eat that bird? I said, well, of course we did. Well, my nephew got all upset and just pitched a fit. He said, I paid a fortune for that bird. He said, that thing's worth a fortune. He said, that bird could speak two different languages. I said, well, he should have said something.
It's hard to argue with that logic.
Yeah,
right there.
So just think, if he would have said something, spoken up, had been curious, you never know. What could have happened? It could have saved his life. And just imagine what it can do with your conflict. You know, you never know. So, other than the sweet potato scuffle, whatever that is, I'm not quite sure. You know, the key to this one is to be curious and fascinated. And so to be genuinely curious, you ask questions and you seek to understand. What was your experience like? You know, back that night in the master bedroom, what was your experience like? What was your intention? And not, you know, with an attitude, but just really, I wanted to understand what your experience was like. And this phrase, these three words, truly changed how we engage with each other after we've had, you know, a disagreement, is help me understand. Three simple words that really communicate to Greg, I don't know what your experience was. I don't know what happened for you. Help me understand. It's from a place of humility. There's not attitude with it. It's not assuming that I know what his experience was. I know what mine was, but what was yours? And, you know, really just seek to understand what happened for you.
And I love that this gets us rolling. When our mm-hmm. attitude is one of curiosity, not judgment, not assumption, but mm-hmm. just genuinely being curious, help me to understand, you know, what was going on for you. It's a great place. We start off giving that eye contact, that listening. Now, help me to understand takes us a little bit deeper towards that intimacy that we're talking about. The validation is all about value. See, now to go a little bit deeper, not only do I want to understand what Aaron, bless you, I don't want to just understand what she's saying. Man, I want that to matter. Regardless of if I understand or get or agree with how Erin feels, I want her to know that matters to me, that I value that. I value the fact that we're different. I value the fact that we're going to have different perspectives of an issue. That was very hard for me in the beginning. A lot of times that as Erin would share feelings that didn't make sense to me, I'd want to debate those. I couldn't understand how you possibly could feel that way, so I'd argue around that. Very different now. I want to value that, but it's hard. Watch this quick little video clip. It's called "What About the Nail," and it just shows that validating somebody can be very, very challenging. Watch this.
It's just there's all this pressure, you know, and sometimes it feels like it's right up on me, and I can just feel it, like literally feel it in my head, and it's relentless, and I don't know if it's going to stop. I mean, that's the thing that scares me the most, is that I don't know if it's ever going to stop.
Is it? Yeah. Well, you do have a nail in your head.
It is not about the nail.
Are you sure? Because, I mean, I'll bet if we got that out of there...
Stop trying to fix it.
No, I'm not trying to fix it. I'm just pointing out that maybe the nail is causing...
You always do this. You always try to fix things when what I really need is for you to just listen. Yeah,
see, I don't think that is what you need. I think what you need is to get the nail
out. See, you're not even listening now.
Okay, fine. I will listen. Fine.
It's just... Sometimes it's like... There's this achy... I don't know what it is. And I'm not sleeping very well at all. And all my sweaters are snagged. I mean, all of them.
That sounds really hard.
It is. Thank you. Ow!
Come on, if you would just...
Don't!
Isn't that painful just to watch? I mean, every part of me just wants to go get a crowbar and hold still. I will hold you down and get this out because I know what you need, which is so true. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes when Aaron and I sit down and we're talking through something, the solutions are just so evident to me. They're just so obvious. And I love her so much, I just want to relieve her of whatever pain that she's in by revealing this perfect solution. And yet she never likes that, and she won't listen, and I don't get it, and it's hard. And I've learned that, you know what, when she's, Aaron is saying things that I don't necessarily agree with, or I saw it very differently, what I've learned over time is to ignore that stuff, to ignore the opinions, the facts as she sees them. None of that stuff matters. At the end of the day, Aaron doesn't care if I validate her version of the story, her fact, as she saw it. What does she really want me to validate? What does she want me to care about? Yeah. She wants me to care about her. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, she needs to matter more than me being right. You know how I've learned to do that? That's painful, because I'm telling you, there's sometimes where I'm hearing her talk, and I'm like, huh, okay, sure, if that's true, which is not, but if that's true, then, yeah. What I've learned to do, though, I love that verse out of Ecclesiastes. I mean, that's one of those that I've just seared into my brain. Talk about meditating on that. Don't pay attention to every word that someone says. Because there's times where the facts and the figures, okay, if I pay attention to that stuff, they will hijack me. Because I don't know about you, but my personality is that I like things to be true and accurate, and if they're not, then we will debate that for an hour.
Or two.
And oftentimes, I would win. You know, no one ever wins if someone feels like they're losing, but in my mind, I would win simply by attrition. I would just wear Aaron down. I would just hang in there and debate and debate and debate until she finally just gives up. And says, fine, whatever, I'll agree to it, I'll sign whatever you want me to sign, just so we can go to sleep, for crying out loud. That's not who I want to be. There's nothing caring about that. I mean, I want, she's got to have room in this marriage. Her feelings have to have room, they have to matter to me. That's my opportunity. But yet, if I focus on the facts and the figures and the details, sometimes it's really, really hard. And what I've learned to do is just go after her heart, go after the emotion. That's never right or wrong. Emotions, as Aaron said earlier today, they are what they are. They're just feelings. Neither right nor wrong, good or bad. It's just how she feels. So she says something like, you know, whatever, gives me some version of her perspective, then I'll just say something like, all right, so if I'm understanding you right, this is how you saw it, but tell me, how did that make you feel? And I get her talking about her feelings, because that's the stuff that I really want to go after. That's the opportunity with validation, is when I don't agree with her facts, go after the emotion, and that's the place that we can settle in. The more and more that I value that, mm-hmm. And how that played out after the whole master bedroom thing is, so when we sat down, hey, can we talk for a second? Yeah. So help me to understand what went on last night. You know, in my mind, I thought this was a good thing. I thought that we'd actually be intimate, like when you came home. That didn't happen. What went on? Like, you got pretty upset. I'd love to better understand that. Being curious. as she started to talk about her precious moment figurine, she said, you know what, my leg was all scraped up, and you just defended yourself. You know, I was upset that my precious moment figurines were broken, and you didn't seem to care. And I'm like, yeah, because they're the creepiest little things I've ever seen in my life. I mean, look at these things. They're big eyes staring down. I was like, honey, man, I did you a favor by getting rid of these things.
Well, then he said, in this conversation, he said, I can fix them. Don't worry about it. I can fix them. So
that's
I held
true.
Him to it, and I gathered all the pieces up and put them over the dining room table and gave him a bottle of super glue. And I left him sitting at the dining room table for several hours. And I would come back and forth, you know, and he'd have, you know, some of the feet put together and part of the face. And then finally I came back in, and he had built one large precious moment figurine. It was just all the pieces stuck together, kind of mosaic, you know.
It looked like something Picasso would put together. That was really creepy.
It was. And I left that little, or not so little, the large precious moment figurine in our master bedroom. Every time we moved to a new house, I plopped it right down on the dresser, and that puppy stared at you over and over and over again, but he has yet to ever rearrange the bedroom. It was just a gentle reminder to not do that without warning me.
That was very effective. Well done. Well played. Here's what happened, all right? So as she's talking about these precious, you know, whatevers, And I'm not tracking with her because, again, I didn't value these things. They honestly just they weirded me out, and so I'm like, honey, sir, why is that such a big deal? Well, all of a sudden she starts to talk about who gave her each particular one, and I had never heard stories behind these things, but as she began to say, you know, my mom gave me this one, and my grandma, who's now deceased, gave me this little bride and groom, and just began to tell the story. All of a sudden, I began to realize that I didn't know that, and that needed to matter to me, because as we do that, what that does is that drops us into that deepest level. See, beyond just listening and understanding and even allowing something to matter, validating, wow, I can see that these things are really important to you. See, empathy is an amazing opportunity because empathy is all about compassion. Sympathy is when we feel bad for someone. Like, I could have had sympathy noticing that her shin was completely devoid of skin. Like I could have sympathy around that. I could have sympathy going, yeah, and these things are shattered. But empathy is something very, very different. Sympathy is when we feel bad with someone. Very different. And people have been constantly trying to come up with new and clever ways to empathize with one another. As a matter of fact, watch this guy. Look what he's done. Pretty clever. As a way to really understand his wife, especially during that certain time of the month.
We've only been married a short time, and we like to share everything.
But we noticed some subtle things we couldn't share.
Subtle things that happen every 28 days or so.
It's nobody's fault.
Well, just nature doing its job.
But it didn't seem right that I was excluded.
Well, thanks to the wonderful people at Merck Frost, we can both now share the PMS experience.
Monthly Man. It allows me the privilege of the female experience.
Each capsule contains tiny time-released hormones that surge through your system, taking you on the emotional rollercoaster ride of your life.
It's beautiful. I never realized how wonderful that is.
Don't worry, I'm here now.
What's that supposed to mean?
Ice cream and talk about it.
Well, it's
loaded
to you.
Monthly Man, because you don't know any better.
We actually sell those back at the book table, so if anybody's interested in those. You know, the good news is we don't need a pill to learn how to do this. Okay? We don't. This is a skill that can be learned. Aaron was way better at it than me. It used to bother me, as a matter of fact, that our kids, when they get hurt, would instantly run to her. Like, they would literally bypass me. I'm standing right there, and they would zip around me to go right to her. And I'm like, well, what in the world is that about? I hate you guys too. You know, like, why? What is going on? Only to really pay attention. And I hate you too as well, you big eyed freaks.
You almost knocked it over again.
Yeah, oh, did I?
Yeah.
Oh, that would have been an accident. Yeah. You know, passive aggressiveness is kind of fun in the moment. But anyway, so yeah, it just bothered me until I really paid attention to what Aaron would do the moment that our kids were hurt. She didn't go into lecture mode, she didn't tell them. Well, of course, you knucklehead, if you're going to run on the wall, and you're bound to slip and fall and cut your knee like you just did. I mean, she handled that very differently. And I'll never forget that moment that someone got hurt and it came right up to me and just allowed me to provide that compassion. That didn't necessarily come really natural to me. It's been something I've had to really work at and pay attention to. But that's who I want to be. I want to be the kind of husband that Aaron feels like really will enter into her world. I want my kids to experience that I care, that I have compassion. What really helped me was this little quote here. People don't care what you know until they know that you what?
Care.
Yeah. And it's I love that quote. And I actually had it in my Bible. And it's something that I just reflected on. That's who we want it to be. People don't care what you know. You could have the world's greatest solution in mind. I could, I had all the glue in the world to paste these things back together. And none of that matters unless Aaron knows that I care. Once she knows that I care, then she's open. She's interested in maybe what I know, in my idea of a solution. That's why this step is not about solutions. This step is all about caring. So easy, natural for me to want to jump into just fix-it mode and let's deal with the problem and then move on. But for so long, I missed such a neat opportunity. I missed an opportunity to go after her heart and to really get it. And so that morning, as we talked about this, I said, well, okay, so tell me more about these things. who gave you that one? And just to hear her kind of run through the stories of her aunts giving her this little nursing precious moment when she graduated, and how her mom, who's now passed away, gave her this one, her grandma's with the Lord. I mean, just all the stories I'd never heard before.
Mm-hmm. Because honestly, I wasn't crazy about these things anymore either.
Oh, don't lie.
No, I really, it was the memories for me that were tied to them that really mattered. It was what the experience, who gave it to me. That's really what mattered.
Yeah, and that made all the difference in the world of willing to enter into her world, mm-hmm. and just understand the stories and how much those meant. Shortest verse in the Bible, who knows it?
Jesus wept,
right? What was he weeping about?
Lazarus.
Yeah, right, Lazarus. What happened to his good friend Lazarus? Yeah, he died. And what I've always been intrigued about this verse is why did Jesus weep with his family? Because ultimately, right, when he got there and he found everybody wailing and crying and going on and on about the brother who died, and he encounters his family. It's always fascinated me that why does the Bible point this out? Because Jesus knew, right, what he was going to do. What did he eventually do to solve this problem of Lazarus' death? Yeah, raise him from the dead. Guys, right, as we are solution lovers, would you consider that a pretty good solution? That might be one of the best I've ever heard. Well done, Jesus, okay? Armed with the world's best solution to a problem, why did he weep with them? Why didn't he say to him something like, because I always think, well, if it had been me, what I would have said is, hey, everybody, eyes on me, shh, okay? Settle down, I got this. Watch, give me 5 minutes, and I'm going to blow your mind. Why didn't he say that? Why did he do that? I don't know. I don't know if there's some big point. I like to believe there is. The point is that people don't care what you know until they know that you care. So again, I'm not saying that's why he did that, but that's what I've taken from that. And that's why I love that verse. It's a great reminder that in those moments, okay, when things don't make sense to me, that I have an amazing opportunity to get to a really, really cool place with Aaron. People will forget what you said. People are going to forget what you did. But people will never, ever, ever forget what? How you made them feel. That's what I want her experience to be. I want her to know that I care. That I care enough about giving up the right to be heard first, to really to try to understand her. I want her to know that I relinquish the right to solve something, to figure out a solution, until she knows that I care. Because see, when I truly understood what that would have been like, I imagine, what if I had had something that my father, who's now with the Lord, what if it had been something that my dad had given me that she broke and sat there and defended herself, made excuses, tried to shift the blame? How would that have felt? I think when I really encountered that, I got it. And that's in what I love. Aaron and I often, we love to say that you have no business asking your spouse to forgive you until you've empathized with him or her. I have no business asking her to forgive me until I really get the pain and what that was like for her. Let that place motivate you to seek forgiveness, because it was when I really got it and understood what that would have felt like, man, I got it. And I was so convicted. I said, honey, I am so sorry. I'm so sorry for how I handled that, for seemingly not to care. I get it. I said, let me go. I will go out. I'm like, where do these things come from? She's like, Carthage, Missouri. I'm like, where?
They have real big ones there.
Isn't that in like Italy or something? Yeah, I know. That's really
cool.
They're
full size.
Yeah, I'm like, I'll drive there all night and I'll bring you back. And see, that's right. You were like, I don't.
Yeah, I didn't want new ones because it was these, the from my family members. That's what I wanted.
Yeah, the memory. Yeah. I remember telling the story one time. Aaron wasn't there. I was teaching this session. And I could tell there was a woman, kind of close, kind of where you're seated, that as I was talking, I would catch her eyes every once in a while. I could just tell that she was really upset about something. So at the break, she came up to me and she said, hey, you know what? You're wrong. I went, you know, you're going to have to narrow down a little bit for me. About what? And she said, you should have replaced those for your wife. And I said, hey, I'm with you. I wanted to. I would have driven all night to old Carthage, Missouri, to get her another one. She doesn't want them. She's like, she kind of went back and sat down. And every single break, she came up to me and said, yeah, I really think you ought to replace them. I'm like, ma'am, you got to leave me alone, okay? I'm telling you, here's my wife's cell phone. You guys work it out. Tell me what to do. But otherwise, the last break she came in, she goes, oh, yeah, I've been praying for you the whole time. Thank you. She goes, and the Lord gave me a word. I'm like, well, it better be the same word that he's given me, because otherwise I'm telling you that she didn't want. So what happened like 2 weeks after that?
2 weeks later, I'm sitting at home in the afternoon. The doorbell rings. So I go and I open the door, and there's this big box on our porch. And so I drag it inside. I open it up, and it's full of Precious Moment figurines. I don't know what was creepier, that we had a box full of these or that the woman found our address and mailed it to us.
That's true.
And they stayed in the living room for a little bit, and then we moved the box down into the basement.
And by we, you mean you?
Me.
Yes.
Yes. And then I think that went to Goodwill at some point. It was a nice gesture.
It was a glorious day.
They are no longer in our home.
To let someone else be creeped out by the
yes,
precious
by
moment figurines.
The not so precious figurines.
So do you see how that's in our opinion how conflict can take us to the deepest levels of intimacy if we walk through that mm-hmm. in a different way. Instead of the combat, instead of the spinning around and around and around doing those reactions, if we can get our hearts open first and then actually sit down and listen and understand each other and validate, allow how we feel to matter and to actually empathize with each other, man, that again, I learned something I'd never known about her And that made such a big difference. And we walked away from the kitchen table really, really super connected. And that's why we would argue that conflict is a great opportunity. Combat, not so much. But conflict can get us to a very different place.
Mm-hmm. And so, again, this whole session has been on really caring about each other, caring about each other's hearts. Tomorrow morning, where we're going to go, is there's a piece of research that says 85% of the time, when you do this, when you listen, you understand, you validate, empathize, and when both people feel cared for, there's really not a solution needed to whatever the problem was. It's taken care of. However, 15% of the time, you need to make a decision. But so tomorrow morning, we're going to talk about how do we make a decision to where we both matter, where it's a win-win, and we can work as a team together and keep the unity in our marriage through making decisions. So that's where we're going to go tomorrow.
Yeah, why don't you guys stand up with us? And God, thank you so much for the way that you model care, that you model compassion. Thank you for just that lesson with watching you weep with a family, even though you knew exactly how you were going to solve it. God, and that's who we want to be. God, thank you for we never have to wonder about your compassion towards us, and we know that that's always available. And help us do that within our marriage. Help us to do that with our children, with our friends. God, help us to be men and women who are known by our compassion and care. So God, just give us opportunities. We talk through things, Lord, to get to a place of openness. So Lord, keep teaching us how to do that, because that's the linchpin in this whole process, is an open heart. So keep showing us how to do that, Lord. We love you so much. We look forward to tomorrow as we learn how to be unified as we make decisions. It's in your precious name we pray. Amen.